Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Castrovers podcast with a K. My name is Christian Corley, and with me, mostly as ever, is James McLean. Hello, James.
Hello.
Hello there. Hello there. Brief apologies for our absence last week. I mean, obviously, you had to put up with Stephen Gallagher and Philip Martin being interviewed rather than us chatting endlessly, droning on and on about Doctor Who Series 11. That was just a bit of a scheduling issue that we had last week. So I thought, hey, hello, it's just to give you something a little bit more interesting. But we are here and we are going to discuss Arachnids in the UK, which I just cannot say without picturing Johnny Rotten snarling. And the most recent episode of Doctor Who, whose name gives me an enormous amount of trouble with the pronunciation for some reason.
Jamie.
Pardon?
Jamie.
Jamie? No, no, the actual episode of
Doctor Who. Oh, right, okay.
Which since the moment I saw it, I thought to myself, that's an unnecessary stupid name for a Doctor Who episode. I don't know why. Maybe that's coloured my opinion of the episode. I don't know. But it's Sungura.
Sarunga.
Sarunga, yeah. Which is kind of a bit like you might describe it as Pigs in Space meets NHS in Space. I don't know. There's we're going to generally talk about both episodes, although I suspect because it's the more recent episode, we will talk more about the more recent episode of Doctor Who Series 11, which went out last night and featured the Doctor and her three friends losing the TARDIS again. There's a thing, actually. This didn't occur to me at the time, but you know, I think we'll probably get to the meat and bones of this episode as we go along. But you know, before Doctor Who Series 11 started, and when Jodie Whittaker was announced as Doctor, and there's all these very silly, sexist comments about having a female Doctor and what have you, and having the Doctor forget two things, forget the TARDIS twice, or lose the TARDIS twice. I don't think that's doing an awful lot to combat those kind of opinions. Claims.
You'll get that whatever she does, because if you've got that feeling, then. Because I mean, if this had happened with Capaldi, no one would even talk about it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
But
I just feel because that's going to happen regardless, maybe there should be more effort in giving a more less scatty sort of.
She didn't lose it. Before she lost it, but she didn't lose it, if you see what I mean. She was taken from it. So, to be fair...
Separated from the TARDIS.
Separated.
Yeah.
Yes. But, I mean, okay, I suppose one of the arguments would be the fact that it's something that you've noticed shows that there is a sort of cultural thing, discourse, conversation going that it taps into. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the fact that you flagged it means there's something there to be flagged, whether or not it's there or not. It is sort of there for you to be flagging it.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. So the Sarunga conundrum. I will get it eventually. I'm usually quite good at pronouncing words. I just think it seems an endless, a pointlessly silly word. The Sarunga was on last night, and it starts off with that separation and this idea of a sonic mind and the junk planet. It's all very sort of early DWM or even Doctor Weekly comic strip, like it's like 2000 AD sort of era with the Pat Mills influence and with a junk planet at the beginning, which is unusual for televised Doctor. We're not so unusual if you're familiar with Doctor in its other forms. contrast the opening of that with the opening of Arachnids in the UK, which is far more interesting, even though quite a lot less happens. I think you've got the Doctor landing in Sheffield and about to say goodbye to her friends and then getting invited in for tea, and then the mystery sort of envelope spirals from there. Whereas this time round, you've got, and you know, obviously it's got to be different from episode to episode, otherwise it's going to be just like treading the same path every time. We got them on doing something, looking for something, which I didn't get, and then being whisked away. And I know, okay, that makes it a bit more interesting, but, and, you know, there didn't really seem to be any need for any of the TARDIS crew to be injured. It didn't play into the story at all, other than the fact they're on a hospital ship. Well, they could have just landed on the hospital ship. And I know this is just a tiny thing, but I found the opening quite jarring, and I do wonder if that might have been... Might that contribute to... Because, you know, if you listen to this, you probably know, but you may not. As with most things these days on the internet, opinion seems to be quite divided on this episode of Doctor Who. And I'm not an awful fan of the Tussaranga conundrum. Now, Arachnids in the UK was good enough. It was okay. It had a few holes, such as the distinction between killing a spider outright or letting the last spider live whilst they feed on each other's bodies in a trapped environment. You know, pretty sure the instant death is more humane, but I'm not a Time Lord. What do I know? James, help me out. What is going on in Doctor Who at the moment?
I don't know. I think it's kind of fun watching you struggle and scramble. There does seem to be I'm careful how to phrase this. It feels like any separation that's occurring feels like there's a sort of almost like there's a sort of a demographic that is being cut from. It does feel a little bit on gender, a little bit on age, and a little bit on maybe show loyalty. I tend to feel that I'm not casting aspersions, just observation. People who are sort of our age, maybe, who have interest in Doctor Who, who are male, seem to have a lot more issue with the show than, say, people who are slightly younger, certainly female, from looking at social media as well. It feels that's where there seems to be a bit of a tension. There seems to be more tension in that sort of grouping than within those sort of cultural makeups. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously a very broad breakdown of over 8 million people's opinion. But it feels within those sort of very obvious sections, which are very loud voices, it feels like the show is not being particularly well received by maybe sort of older male Doctor Who fans. And that's not to say that the men are being sexist, just saying that I just feel that this seems to be as if the show is perhaps speaking to different people now, or whether intentionally or unintentionally, maybe it's speaking to different people, and that might not be a bad thing. You know, maybe it's not so much the show. I mean, because whatever people thought of Stephen Moffat's show, and obviously we've had our issues with it ourselves, it did tend to speak probably more for the 30 to 40 year old man than it did to pretty much any other age group.
I'm not sure about that. I think certainly the last few years of it, I would agree, rather, with the Matt Smith era. I've been talking to my token young relative, and she loves the new Doctor. We haven't really talked about the stories, but she loves Jodie Whittaker's Doctor in a way that she absolutely could not get on board with the 12th Doctor, and she loved the 11th Doctor. So there's obviously a youth thing there. I personally, and you know, I'm trying to do this as objectively as possible, so I probably should get this out of the way. Arachnids, adequate, not bad. The Saranga Conundrum, I would rather watch a long-running... Listeners of the podcast with a K will appreciate this. I'd rather go and watch Time of the Rani again.
Well, I've heard some people say that. And yet somehow
I was just going to say, I consider this an absolute nadir of Doctor Who post 2005.
Well, I find it really weird because, I mean, part of me is not horrendously engaged. And I wonder if that's because the show, as I've got older, just speaks to me a little less because it's aimed at such a broad audience. Naturally, it's going to speak possibly less to you than something which is more focused. So I'll sit and I'll watch a variety of different shows that give me more to play with than perhaps Doctor Who has done for a while, apart from an occasional episode where I thought that's really good. I have no issue with this story. I had a lot of issues with Arachnids, but for different reasons that other people had. My issues with this story were minimal. It did not blow me away, but I didn't see anything inherently wrong in it either. I will agree with you. I think the initial setup felt a bit odd and possibly unnecessary. Maybe it gave it a little bit of a different colour to what we've normally seen. Maybe it wanted to show us a little more of them in a sort of situation which wasn't a console room or in the middle of the actual story. It didn't really feel particularly natural for me. I wasn't over keen on it. But the actual story itself, I had no issues with. And to be honest, I still think it's speaking to eras of Doctor Who that a lot of... I don't want to sound like I'm being smarter than everyone else. I don't think I am. To me, it seemed like it was speaking to eras of Doctor Who that other people would actually advocate. I think it has, as I was just talking to a colleague of mine, there was a feeling that the stories of this era are simpler than, say, Stephen Moffat's, which were often very complicated and quite clever. Regardless of what you think of him, he could write some very clever stuff. These seem a lot more straightforward and seem to play on listening or how much you're enjoying the characters, perhaps more than the actual story is giving. And that, to me, speaks of the 60s, is what this show seems to be aiming at the moment. The 60s would have, no one can say The Keys of Marinus was a particularly in-depth or complex story in any of its sections. It feels that's what it's doing now. And whether you get on board with that is entirely up to what your preferences are. I'm not saying that I think it was perfect. And as I was chatting to my colleague, one thing that he brought up was it kind of felt like it was lacking a second agency in there. That if you're going to do this sort of almost like Alien, Ridley Scott's Alien sort of thing, and try and subvert his rules a bit, you need a second antagonist in there just to add to the tension. Yeah, you had this bomb that might go off if they did the wrong thing, but maybe you needed some sort of actual agency in there that they were actually working against. Usually, as was pointed out, like a traitor or, someone with an agenda. And that was missing. And so maybe that could have been there. But ultimately, I had no real issues with it at all. So it didn't blow me away, but I don't see the hatred for it. It seems to be doing it. I could have placed this in other eras of New Who, and it would have been like, well, it's I could have fitted this in a Moffat era or even a Davis era, to be honest. It was nothing mind-blowing, but it wasn't as shocking as people have said. I certainly wouldn't watch Time of the Rani than this, but that's me.
Well, I did something I've never done with Doctor Who before, and I started looking at the internet.
Oh, well, I've done that in Doctor Who before several times.
That's a first for me. That was, break upon, a first for me. I'm just disappointed in so many ways. I mean, on the other hand, following Rosa and Arachnid in the UK, I do at least have something that I can show to Bruce tonight, and maybe he will... maybe it'll help him sleep. I don't know. I'm sure he will enjoy it. I'm sure he'll like the monster. Because, although it did look remarkably like Stitch from the 20-year-old Disney movie.
Nibbler from Futurama.
It was a nicely realised little critter.
Speaking again to my colleague who's got a son, he was saying that this new series hasn't touched his son, which has surprised him.
Right.
And I think that is still a questionable issue of who this if that's intentional or not, whether this is aimed at a sort of mid-teen demographic or whether it is missing a demographic it was aiming at. I don't know. It feels
I think it's 11, 12 upwards, I think.
Which, again, is a danger for a show which has always succeeded on catching young and carrying them through until the next new young batch are spawned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we go back 40 years or so, nearly 40 years, 1979-80 series of Doctor Who, you know, although City of Death, the 1979 series, although City of Death and Destiny of the Daleks had good ratings, the rest of the season didn't really.
And there was a strike that was caused.
Exactly, which contributed to those ratings. But, you know, I mean, you know, that era of Tom Baker and Lala Ward, although it's a popular era, and, you know, it was really the Tom Baker show at that point.
Yes.
And it was aimed pretty much at sort of, I would say, 15 upwards. I think 14 or 15 upwards, and, you know, it's often been cited for its undergraduate humour. You know, you've got Sharda.
Yep.
Which obviously wasn't finished, but, you know, set in a university city.
Yep.
You know, so, and, you know, this period of Doctor Who didn't do great in the ratings. So... Yeah, I think you make a point there. If kind of focusing too much on one particular age group isn't wise. There's been comparisons with this and last week's episode, and some of the others with the Sojourn Adventures. And I think we've mentioned it ourselves in previous editions of our series 11 reviews at the on the podcast. And I think Sojourn Adventures is being unfairly brought into things here because it's a different show and. It has a better team at the heart of it, and it has the shorter episodes, and it has a bit more, I think it has a stronger core at it. And I think what is obvious by now, we're halfway through the series, more or less. We've had five episodes, there's five more to go. And I think what we have learned is that Bradley Walsh is, although sidelined in the last episode, is overall has been carrying things, and Jodie Whittaker's adequate as the Doctor. Although I have enjoyed her, I wasn't on board with the female Doctor to start with. I'm now kind of thinking that maybe, I know some of the names that were thrown around were kind of felt obvious, but I'm now thinking maybe someone of the stature of Olivia Colman. Or Olivia Colman would have been a better choice, because I'm not finding Jodie to be as engaging or convincing as she should be, and as I've seen her being off camera.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, Matt Smith's first season, he didn't really do anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's damned if, in a lot of circles, she's damned if she do, damned if she doesn't. So this, I saw one of the big complaints of this episode is that the companions had nothing to do.
Yeah.
And it focused on her. And yet in previous episodes, the complaint has been there's nothing for her to do because it focuses, you know, like, well, where's the middle ground? I do think that the writing of her character has still lacked a certain strength. A certain strength of conviction. I thought there were some interesting things they played here. I thought they played her desire to get back to a ship. I thought that was kind of interesting, and it played well for her. She still reminds me a lot of a Peter Davison sort of Doctor, which interestingly is another Doctor with a large team.
Mm-hmm.
She feels very much in that sort of vein.
Do you think she lacks presence to be the Doctor?
I don't think she lacks presence. I think, again, like I said with McCoy, there's times where they try and play her in a way which just doesn't work. And I'm not sure whether that's the actress, the lines, or whether it's gender assumptions. Because there's certain setups, and I've been wondering this, that what a man can play and what a woman can play, who is literally playing the same role, and whether we have certain assumptions which come with both. And when it's done by a woman, do we react differently to a man? Because we are brought up with different expectations of gender. Wrongly so, but we do. And whether it's her or whether it's us bulking at seeing something which doesn't fit with what we're used, I don't know. It somehow doesn't quite work. Something, yeah. But this stuff that she does, which I could imagine Davison doing, or lines that Davison would have, and I wouldn't think about it. Because people have said, well, she's always teaching. She's very preachery. You know, she preaches about the antimatter. And you think, well, that's what other doctors would do. Why do we suddenly have an issue with her doing it? It's either her delivery, or is it actually us? And it could be either. I'm not saying it's one or the other. But
it could also be the dialogue.
Oh, it could be the dialogue. I'm just wary at the moment of making... jumping into why sometimes it doesn't fit and blaming it on her or the show, and it's actually me. And maybe another season of that will give a feeling, or maybe one day another female doctor would be even better, because that would give you something to compare notes with. But yeah, I still don't mind the series. It doesn't blow me away, but I don't mind it. And I kind of feel it's doing a 60s thing, and I rather like that. It feels like the sort of pace of the Aztecs, or as I say, Keys of Marinus, just things where the characters sort of just gently work their way through. My biggest issue was last week's was with the Arachnids, and the issue there I had is what I've been saying all along, is I was actually really annoyed when we had this going back to their time so soon, like we've had in every bloody series since 2005, by about the third or fourth episode, usually the fourth, it is always the fourth, they go back to their world and they meet the family. And then we have this time where they realise that, you know, going across all these various atrocities and war zones that they're battling against is actually fun. And let's all team up and go and do more of it. And even though there's that nice bit where the Whittaker Doctor says it's actually dangerous and I cannot protect you, which is sort of goes against the sort of David Tennant and Eccleston era of I will protect this person. Mm-hmm. That was a nice bit of it. But ultimately, again, it just makes this whole thing into what it's been before. And it's like, why did you do that? You didn't need it. You could have even had them land not in Sheffield and had a spider's issue, and then them have to get back into the TARDIS because it's quicker than going down or going up the M11 to try and get to, do you know what I mean? It just felt like, why are you doing this? Why are you repeating a formula that you're so clearly this season trying to get away from, that gives you no benefit? You have a boring family with their boring problems, with the serendipity, which was always awkward in say the third Doctor's era as well, where this main story would be linked to something that Sarah Jane was reporting on or whatever, you know. And it just felt like you just don't need to do this. I can get past the Trump character because we've obviously had rather crass political statements in Doctor Who in the past, in both the 70s and the 80s. Just doing the same thing, really. And I quite like the fact that the character gets no comeuppance and just walks off. That was a little fresh. But ultimately, my main... And yeah, the toxicity was a little on the nose. But again, Green Death, we were okay with it when we watched that. There's no difference to that. But this whole nucleus of generating this gung-ho feels like, you know, the middle class white student adventure of going around Europe or India sort of attitude to time travel. Mm-hmm. Even though obviously the TARDIS is made up of people of color now, it's not all white, but it has that sort of mentality behind it, that, you know, we Westerners will go and explore these rather quaint areas and look at these people, these primitive people having their funny little wars, make comment on it, then move on to the next place. It has that sort of vibe, and just wish the show would get away from it. So compared to that, I quite like this.
Right.
But,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's go back to that particular story and find out what our... regular listeners thought of Arachnids in the UK, which I can't help feel could have done with some punk music in there.
A better title, because it doesn't sound like Anarchy in the UK. Arachnids, it starts with A, but it has a totally different phonetic feel to it, doesn't
it? Yes, it does, yeah.
It doesn't, it's just a stupid title, but yeah.
It is somewhat silly. Paul James Nelson observed it didn't seem to have a resolution, but Jodie continued to shine. Gareth Lloyd, a great episode. I feel like I'm finally getting on board with Jodie's Doctor. Trevor Arthur, by the time they added all the family, friends and hotel workers, it just became a mess. Never really felt any jeopardy for the Doctor. The three companions going back to become Team TARDIS was cringeworthy. Shane Rivett, no Time War, no In Your Face story arc, no Doctor-centric tales, just the Doctor and companions doing their thing. Luke James, the best episode so far. Gary Akers, great episode. Doctor Who pausing the fun family adventure and social commentary for a pure shot of Hinchcliffe-esque terror cranked up to 11. Michael Ford. Orange Man Bad meets Spiders. Andrew Wilberforce Moose Fairbrass. Andrew Wilberforce Moose Fairbrass, a name which I'm never quite certain whether to take seriously or not. This week's sermon is on the merits of recycling and respecting the planet and all that live on it whilst demonising mankind. That then degenerates into a bit of a debate with another commenter, so we won't go into that at the moment because we've got that to come next week. Ending made no sense, says Aston Lewis. Jodie continues to be excellent. Special effects so far have been amazing. I found the stories need a good villain. Don't get me started on good villains because we'll be here for the rest of the podcast and probably the rest of the series. I think the effects with the spiders were very good. I don't think enough people have said that, actually.
Yeah, they were good.
They were very good. Which is one of the reasons why I mentioned this earlier, why my little boy won't be watching Arachnids in the UK until he's a little bit older, because they were that good. And I think, you know, we've obviously seen less good insectoids and arachnids in Doctor Who in the past. I'm obviously thinking of Planet of the Spiders and Turn Left. And given how recent Turn Left was compared with Planet of the Spiders, the CGI spiders were far better than the bug in Turn Left.
Yes.
So a couple more. Greg Bartlam, a very scary episode. Paul G, the horror aspect just highlights Chibnall is still writing Torchwood, but in a 7 p.m. slot. I think back in the day we considered Torchwood to be a pretty childish show,
mm-hmm.
and not as grown up as it thinks it is. So that's we'll have a better view on Series 11 at the end of the series, I think, maybe. Greg Bartlam, a very scary episode. I hated the scene where 100 of the spiders were moving towards the music. I am 50 today and last week and will still probably have nightmares.
Is this to do with spiders, though? Because, I mean, if you had, I don't know, any alien creature sort of doing the same sort of thing, I wonder if people would have found it quite so... Because the spiders didn't really do anything, did they? Cause...
No, they didn't. They did lots of sort of moving around and popping down from the ceiling, didn't they, really?
And they spun webs around people and pulled them away, which is a bit gross. But ultimately, in terms of monsters, it is really our own fear of spiders, I think, which really motivates the episode. And I think they were probably quite aware of that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Well, what if jumped down on their back or something? That would have freaked me out. And I was half waiting for that.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't go along that line, actually, because it is kind of a Doctor Who thing, isn't it?
Maybe too tactile, maybe too real.
Maybe. If you're going for the threat of spiders taking over an entire city, it's not a massive step. You know, you've already thrown caution into the wind with the spiders. I don't think it's a massive step to take. It might have improved the episode for you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. How are you on spiders? Are you okay with spiders?
In real life, yeah, as long as they're not big. I find spiders problematic because they are so divorced from anything human.
I'm like that with giraffes.
Fair point.
I find giraffes the most unusual creatures.
But they're not sort of... I mean, I think because spiders are so horrifically inhuman, if they're at any large scale, I find that quite freaky.
Are you scared by fish?
No.
Okay.
But then I'm not quite sure what it is. It's probably movement. It's probably, yeah. I don't know, but I know what you're saying. But there's something about spiders which, when in large scale, I find very freaky. I don't know. If they'd actually had tactile contact, yeah, that would have freaked me out, I think. If they'd leapt on people's backs, that would have freaked me out. But the way they played it was enough that was fine for me.
Maybe they should have done that. Maybe they should have gone down that. Spiders leaping on backs controlling people. Just do that. And you've got the personification, you know, that's
I think what was clever about Planet of the Spiders like that was is that it made the spiders creepy, but it didn't overly play into fear of spiders because it sort of almost alienized them with their sort of consciousness.
Yeah.
So they weren't like unthinking or, you know, instinctive creatures. So I thought that was quite a clever way. Well, in this one, it felt like they were hemmed in because they were like spiders, but they didn't want too much of spiders touching people, or they were very aware of arachnophobia. So they felt a little, it was interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we've been doing this ratings thing, haven't we? Rating the episodes as we've watched them. Obviously, we're going back a week. I would probably give Arachnid 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I'd probably give it, for my personal enjoyment, I'd probably give it a 6 or a 5, maybe a 5, because it didn't really speak to me. I felt the family were terrible. I felt the family getting involved in adventure felt hammy, sort of thrust in.
Yeah, I liked the family, but I didn't like the mother.
I've got no problem. You know, if the family were just a family in the story, it would be fine. But I just feel that it's just unnecessary to have these constant families, which ultimately end up having to be the same thing for virtually every doctor, is that they're very suspicious of the doctor because that's what you would be. So they play exactly the same role when they come into it. And I just don't want them. I just don't need them. And this story could have been far more flowing and more interesting if it just didn't have that element to it. And they'd actually landed in a place with this whole issue. Perhaps even a small village in the old English Doctor Who tradition with a large company on the outskirts in the old Pertwee style would have probably set this story up more simply and allowed them to do what they wanted better than taking them to Sheffield, which just feels like I say, it closes the universe in when within three episodes we're back again where we started and it's done every series. And I feel like, so I might actually give it a 4 for that because I just feel it needs to be punished. It needs to stop doing this. And I couldn't punish it at the time. I wanted to punish it because I thought you don't need to be doing this. I can't see. I would actually like to genuinely sit down and not as a criticism, but just ask, what does bringing it back to the family every fourth episode for the last 13 years bring the series? What I want to understand why we need to keep doing this, because I just don't see where it's helping.
Well, do you know what? This isn't directly related to what you're saying, but I think I've been given some thought. We had a podcast some months ago about Doctor Who going for a more sedate pace.
Yeah.
Like calm down on the rushing around and things like that. Focus on the threats rather than letting them be kind of quickly explained away and that sort of thing. I think Doctor Who has slowed down a bit. We have longer scenes, we have more dialogue between the characters. When it's well written, it's excellent. When it's not so well written, such as with the Sungura conundrum, still an awful title, it doesn't perhaps work so well. And it doesn't make me think that, it does lead me to think that although we've got extra characters, we've got, you know, three companions instead of one or two, there does need to be. For that pace to work on a 45-minute show in the second decade or getting towards the third decade of the 21st century, I do think that a stronger overarching storyline is required for that pace, for motivation for the characters to work.
Surely it has that inbuilt. And in any other show where we have characters who are going on a personal journey, they don't necessarily have to every quarter go back to their origins physically and see their family.
I know
what you mean, because we've got one character who's recovering from cancer and grief. We've got another character who's got dyspraxia and grief. We've got another character who is bored with a job in the usual Doctor Who tradition and wants to become something bigger and special. They have their own motivations they can be exploring, as they sort of are, to be fair, through the series without having to go back home.
Yeah.
I don't think home does anything. I think it almost feels like a lazy way. And I hate using that term in writing because I think it's a really rude. So I try and think of another. It seems a very conventional way to sort of try and give depth to characters.
Yeah.
And I don't think it really does. Not well, I mean, it can do, I suppose. You learn a little bit about
formulae,
but yeah, it just feels like the show should be about expanding outwards. It's a show which, to me, as it's built as an sort of like an almost semi-anthology show with the world, the space and time at their behest, to keep going back to that single place doesn't seem to do any of that any sense.
Give it a better reason to go there.
Oh, yeah, maybe so. Or do that at the end of the series and bring them back. Give them a whole series of them trying to get back and going on adventure after adventure. It just seems to be a very straightforward structure which would suit the show and get it away from doing what it's done before. If it never done this before and then on the fourth episode it wanted to go back to its origins of the first, fine. But it does it every series. And it's just like, why? That's the problem for me. A one-off would be fine. I forgave Rose for it. I almost forgave Martha for it on the basis that they actually make reference to it. Is this like what you do? You take your girlfriend to the past and the future and then back home.
Mm.
Fine. But after that, it should stop. Yeah. And it doesn't. And that's really frustrating for me. And I just feel that that's exactly what a show that's been going 13 years should be avoiding doing. It should be trying to do different stuff.
Yeah. I mean, no, I mentioned earlier before, just in case you're a new listener, you weren't aware of my view of having a female doctor in the past and things. But what I have said repeatedly since the casting is that there has to be an effort to make this show of good quality, but also to do things differently and do them in the right way. And, you know, taking what is essentially a risk with the casting, you've got to have an end result that is worth the effort for everyone involved, worth the audience tuning in and watching it. Because, as you know, you can get as kind of pro female doctor as you like, but if the end result is sub quality, subpar, if it's not better than what went before, and every doctor should be better than what went before, because the lessons are learned that you take forward with the writing and the production and everything, and you know, the cinematography and the CGI and its effects seem to be perfectly on the money and very impressive at the moment. But if what's at the core of it doesn't have longevity for rewatch, especially in the day and age of when everyone's rewatching stuff, I just feel it needs to be better than it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I've said previous weeks, been rewatching the Tennant era. We've just got to the end of time. And so I'm kind of braced for a change in quality, because there was a change in quality with Series 5 following the end of time. But, you know, that's people have their issues with the end of time. People have their issues with every single Doctor Who. The end of time was watched by millions and millions of people, both parts. Let us not forget. And it is Doctor Who that people remember. Are people going to remember arachnids in the UK? Probably for the spiders. Are people going to remember the Sungura conundrum?
I suppose, to be fair, things like arachnids in the UK is going to be about as memorable to me as Tooth and Claw was, or the Lazarus experiment.
Mm.
I mean, the counter argument to that, obviously, is I've not seen anything this season so far with perhaps perhaps Rosa being the exception, which has felt like anything that would be particularly remembered. Five episodes in, I would kind of hope that the next ones do up their game and do something a little more interesting. But, so, yeah, it's a difficult one. I'm beginning to wonder whether... It's not that I think four characters is a bad move. I'm just not quite sure they've got the right four characters. I'm just don't feel Yaz at all. I just don't. She just feels utterly immaterial.
Yeah, I'm. I like her when she is there, but she feels she's easily forgotten, and she doesn't. What she gets given to do, like shooting at Stitch when he comes into the antimatter room, for instance, and I think this goes as well, the whole pregnant guy thing as well. there's a bit of a freak showness to that. It feels a bit as a B plot goes, it feels a bit trite, and there to add maybe more flavour to a thin B plot than there needs to be. It doesn't feel naturally there. It doesn't feel organically there in the story. It feels like it's been put there for sensationalism. That's what I'm trying to say. It doesn't feel like it has a place in the story. And I'm not, I mean, that isn't a personal commentary on anyone's particular situation in life. That's how that feels in that episode. And then you've got two characters who maybe are working better, sidelined with what feels to me as a pointless Z plot, really.
I think, again, it comes down to, I think I can see what it was trying to do. I think what the problem is it's not doing enough of it to make it make sense. I think the idea is that this is a homage to the disaster movie plot.
Where
you have this is actually what my colleague was saying, to be fair, it was his point more than mine, that you have a pregnant lady on board the aircraft, and it's playing on that sort of trope. Yeah. But there are no other characters there to sort of make you feel that trope being subverted. Mm. You've got, like,
guitar playing nun.
There's exactly, the nun was actually the one that he brought up as well, where's the nun? And yes, so you're lacking that other... those other stereotypes within that genre to make that work. At the same time, I think also I can see on paper why it sort of made sense that you wanted to explore Ryan's father issues and as being a son. And it's almost like, well, this is science fiction. We can have a father who is about to have a son. Yeah. And that fits nicely within this genre trope. But because that genre trope isn't fully constructed, it sort of sits unnaturally there, and it feels like it's just a little too far forward. But there's nothing else really there apart from the other two, as you say, to really not stop it from coming forward, because it's got nothing to compete with. So I can see its intention. I think you're quite right. It's nothing to do with politics. It's just simply the question of whether it just feels a bit out of place. It almost feels like it shouldn't be there at all.
Yeah.
And this should never have been a medical ship, and it should just be in a military ship.
And then there's the bit at the end as well, with the
android,
the eulogy thing.
Yes.
But by which point I was waiting for it to end so I could continue my Friends rewatch.
Well, I thought it was odd because it didn't feel needed, because we didn't really get to know this character well enough that we as the audience felt that we needed to have a eulogy. Yeah, I kind of felt that when he was talking to the organic butler, whatever you want to call it, that sort of did its job, where that conversation was about how important she was to both of them, fine. And then I kind of felt the next priority as the audience was to find out how they were getting back to the TARDIS, which didn't come up, which would be fine normally if they'd not made a big thing about that in the first act. That you felt that needed resolution, even if it was just a line that really sort of just, I don't know. So there were things in there which I think were a bit untidy as in terms of construction. I still don't think it deserves the hatred I've seen.
Well, shall we have a look at that?
Yeah.
So we've got on our Facebook page, we've got Jeff Waddle, 70% great, 30% crap again. So at least he's been positive.
Yeah.
Luke James, weak and boring. Andrew Dick, I have found new appreciation for Pip and Jane Baker. Hey! Oh, dear me. We really need to talk about Pip and Jane and Chris Chibnall. Lewis David Blaney, not as strong as the past three, but a worthy effort. Nick Caulfield, to be honest, I quite enjoyed it. I think I'd rather say standalone than filler for an episode like this. It was more character development for Ryan, but it seemed as though it gave Jodie a little more to do than other episodes, and Graham... Mm-hmm. Got to take a little more of a back seat. Brendan Harrison, terrible episode. Andrew Wilberforce, Moose Fairbrass, a real candidate for one of the worst episodes since 2005. I think I've read somewhere that currently Love and Monsters has a higher score on IMDb than the Sungura Conundrum. Nick Griffiths has not seen it yet, so we can't go with that. Hamish Bell, although I feel in this episode Jodie's settling into a role, it was weak. it felt like Doctor Who does Disney / Pixar does Alien, with a Sarah Jane type monster of the week that diffused the threat of the whole tale. Emily Barth hasn't seen it yet because that's how much I don't care anymore. Oh dear. Gary Akers, a skosh too much exposition. I'm not sure what that means, but I actually enjoyed this one. Will definitely be a love it or hate it for most. Also, on your podcast this week, would love to hear our overall thoughts about the show and Jodie Whittaker now that we're at the halfway point. I think we've done that, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so. You're right.
Trevor Arthur, slow labour, too many characters. Shane Rivett, completely forgettable characters, lots of running down corridors. Rich Goldtree, easily the poorest episode of the run so far. Katie Poole writes a lot, so if you're a listener and you're on our Facebook page, which you can just easily find and like, go and find what Katie Poole has to say. I find it difficult to disagree with most of it. Another hot mess from Chibbers. He seems to have a scriptwriter's equivalent of ADHD, much like in The Ghost Monument. We are given so many plot threads and potential threats that we barely know which way to look, and then go and read the rest yourself. Good argument. So, ratings. How would you rate the Sundora conundrum?
I'd happily give it another 7. You didn't.
Okay. Well. No, as I've said before, Time and the Rani is my least favourite episode serial of Doctor Who. And that's not to say that it is the worst, because there are others that I've not enjoyed. But I do consider it to be the worst produced, least enjoyable episode of Doctor Who. A Doctor Who that makes me want to eat my fist. The Sundora conundrum does not make me want to eat my fist. However, I do feel, as I've said, that this is the worst episode since 2005. And I would rather watch Time and the Rani than have to watch this again. Based on that logic,
For me, Time and the Rani, the issue for me is that it's, a lot of the time, is it's slightly cringeworthy, regardless of the stories, is that you see Sylvester clearly not being able to find his character yet.
Yeah.
You've got this terrible thing going on with Kate O'Mara as the Rani, dressing up as Mel to trick the Doctor. I mean, if you can take all those components out, there's a lot in Time of the Rani, which is all right. It's quite run-the-mill, but it's fine.
Well, you know, the other thing is, as well, is that Doctor Who was not at its strongest point in 1987.
True.
It had a much smaller budget. It was put on against Coronation Street. It was showed against Coronation Street. This was a show that was struggling in every way. The show that we've got now should not be struggling at all.
But there's nothing, to be fair to it, though, there is nothing inherently wrong in what it's doing at the moment. There's just nothing that is inherently really engaging, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. And episode. I think that's where the difference is. I think maybe, I know, I am aware that 2005, post-2005 Doctor Who is not the same beast as pre-1989 Doctor Who. So it's not entirely the same thing. But I would say, if we're talking like the pantheon of Doctor Who, which is a horrendously pretentious phrase, I have to give this... If I give it 2 out of 10, I'm being generous.
That's interesting.
And I think I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed. I sat there with absolute... abject disappointment at what was unfolding on the screen in front of me, a show that was not engaging me in any way whatsoever beyond their initial arrival on the casualty ship.
But what's interesting is that, I mean, I've watched The Sunmakers and have gone onto the internet and got bored, and apart from a couple of key very good performances in there, The story and the speed and the pace and what happens is, to me, is utterly dull, even though there's a political commentary in there. It's still considered one of those quite pretty good ones. Obviously not the best of Tom Baker, but it's considered very good. Underworld, again, similar sort of thing. The first episode has some vaguely interesting things going on, but I'll end up being disassociated. And I just kind of, what I'm trying to say is that when I watched this, I felt not a massively amount of difference to when I watched those.
I think the difference,
a little more engaged,
maybe, is that those two have a common element that modern Doctor Who doesn't have and has maybe had and lost.
What's that?
Tom Baker.
Well, yeah, I think Tom Baker holds the two together, but I think it's one of those things where it's just like, I'm trying to put it into context for myself rather than for you.
But I think you're kind of touching on a point. And again, it comes back to the Doctor. Jodie Whittaker is not alone in this. I think if you're going to do, we've said before, no one's gone into this thinking that I'm going to make a rubbish episode of Doctor Who. Everyone's gone to work to do their absolute best to produce the best that they can. It goes on their CVs. It sits on their show reels. No one's turned up for work feeling half-assed.
Absolutely.
But I think if you have a stronger actor as the Doctor, and this goes back to what I was saying about Olivia Colman, I think, if you've got a stronger actor as the Doctor, then you have the personality at the heart of the show to get through episodes that don't necessarily work for everyone.
I don't think
Jodie's got that, unfortunately.
Not
at her current age, anyway.
Not 100% sure I agree, but I do certainly feel that my problem with Jodie's is that I find when I see her interviewed, that is what I want to see as the Doctor rather than what's written for her.
Yeah.
And I think that's always my disappointment with the character. And I'm sure there's someone else I had this with, and it might have been... I'm not sure. Was it Capaldi? Perhaps not. But there was someone who I felt...
I think you did say that about Capaldi at some point, yeah.
Yeah, that somehow who he is as a person is what I would like... Who the person... That should be there, and it isn't. And that's my problem with Jodie's, is that I think Jodie... They need to write her more like Jodie. And I'm wondering whether when it comes to that Series 2, when they eventually get to do it, whether that's where they will move with it. Because they made very clear movements with Capaldi between series. Yeah. I wonder if she'll become a little more written about how they think of how Jodie speaks. Because I think that's what it needs. I think, because Jodie's just got a very sort of natural, some people call it dorkishness, sort of very natural charm and dorkishness about her, which I think would carry it without alone. That would be all you'd need. And the writing doesn't do this. And these moments where you get these sort of very doctorish moments where she has to stamp her authority or say something in a certain urgency or with agency, which I just don't feel that Jodie would need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I feel, to me, is the disconnect. It's not that I think she's not good enough to do this part. I still feel she's being written in a way which seems less interesting when you've seen the actress herself talk. And that seems to get lost a bit.
Yeah.
But maybe if, as I say, they do another series with her, we'll see a change, and that would be interesting.
Well, we should probably mention the Christmas special news, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
And this is, you probably know this, that the Doctor Who Christmas special isn't going to be on at Christmas. Well, not on Christmas Day. There is speculation that it will be on New Year's Day, which would make it, as things stand at the moment, because there's been no announcement, as things stand at the moment, that would make it the only episode of Doctor Who in 2019. Various sites have reported on this. Has the BBC confirmed this yet? I'm not entirely certain.
Not sure.
Don't think they have. But we've got news that... Just get rid of that. This was announced claimed in tabloid press that Doctor Who would not have a Christmas special this year. Although there is, it's in the Mirror, reporting that Whittaker will not get the opportunity to star in a Christmas special this year since the showrunners have, quote-unquote, run out of Christmas-related storylines. Now, we know it's got an 11th episode to the series of 10 in the main run. So it's it does seem likely that it would be a New Year's storyline episode. Paraphrasing from Screen Rant there. Now, in many ways, it's a good thing because the barrel for Christmas-related Doctor Who's, save going back to the year zero or 3 AD, because it wasn't a year zero, was there? There was minus 1 AD and then there's 1 AD, although modern scholars and historians reckon that Christ was born in 3 AD. That's the Jesus Christ who more historical evidence exists than for Julius Caesar, before anyone starts getting arsy about that. Save that one. There's pretty much little they could do that ties into Christmas nicely. And we've obviously had the Husbands of River Song and the return of Dr. Mysterio, etc., etc., etc. Recent Doctor Who Christmas specials haven't not been great. So I don't think it's a bad idea to move away from the Christmas special.
Okay. Yeah. I remember reading a few things that Starburst writer J.R. Southall was sort of saying on this lines, suggesting that this sort of thing has been in the motion for a while. Mm-hmm. It seems to fit a little more with these sort of strategic changes they're having with drama at the moment, which I wonder whether they're moving a lot of certain, they're spitting off dramas from Christmas Day, trying to sort of perhaps mix a little more with the sort of more factual entertainment stuff, as well as maybe a few popular dramas, move things to New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, which has had popular moves. As Southall has pointed out, Sherlock did very well on New Year's Day. I don't even think it's to do with content for Christmas. I think this is where BBC is trying to shift its drama around into more visible areas.
Well, more light entertainment at Christmas on Christmas evening would be fun.
That would be my guess. I know some people have said, oh, this is clearly evidence that they've lost confidence in the show, and it's like, I don't think it is. I just think how they deal, they're just working different strategies of how to manage drama shows against the growing popularity of, you know, VOD.
Well, yeah, I mean, 13, like we've had 13, haven't we? So, is it 13 Christmas specials? We've had one every year, haven't we? So,
I mean, I agree with you, though. I think there is an issue, especially for writers, and it's an issue we've brought up lots of times, is that Christmas doesn't seem to really benefit Doctor. It just seems to become a hindrance because it keeps constantly having to try and retie itself into the... I think moving away from Christmas is good. I have no issue with that at all. I don't think it's to do with any questions of the show's quality or lack of confidence in it. I think it's to do with BBC strategies, which I think will probably play in its favour, but we'll see. I think it's frustrating that there's going to be potentially a long time before there's another.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were talking about this in the summer, weren't we? That we'd been given the heads up that there wasn't going to be a show in 2019, and you know it's November now, and they still haven't started filming. So if there is going to be a show in 2019, it's going to be very late in the day to get it on air.
But this has happened before, so again, it's a bit unusual to have it happen straight after a revamp to the. To the franchise, but
which is it's not just odd, it seems self-destructive. I mean we've talked about the BBC's handling of Doctor Who series 11 from very early on. Mm-hmm. And this seems to be just another chalk on that bedpost of getting it wrong. I think it's, you know, having a, you know, relaunching the show and then taking it off for a year, you're left with having to relaunch the show again.
Yeah. I think also there's probably, because people have got to remember that when these decisions are taken a long time in advance. And I would reckon a lot of reactions to, if you want to look for cynical reactions to scheduling of Doctor Who, you're probably going to have to look back at last year and how it performed. And it performed really badly at Christmas. The year before, it didn't perform particularly brilliantly either. And the ratings overall were particularly bad. So if there's any feelings that maybe there's a sort of cynicism or uncertainty in Doctor Who, that'll probably come from that era. if you want to be cynical and say, yeah, Doctor Who's moving Christmas Day, it won't be because of Whittaker. It'll be because of Capaldi. I'm sad as that is. That would be the reason that I would say, if you wanted to go for a cynical edge and go, yeah, it was moved for a reason, or there's not a rush to produce the next season, it'll be because there's been questions of ratings and questions of the show for a while. And we've known there's been questions of whether the show needed a break for a long time. So these things may factor into those political decisions, which might change if they've suddenly felt the Sunday slot and Whittaker has been good, but by now it would be too late to make those changes. So maybe production could be shifted ahead. I don't know. I don't know how these things work. But I would sort of say these decisions are from the past rather than now. I think any site which starts saying, yeah, this is because of Jodie, or it's because the show, yeah, I don't think it's to do with that at all. I think, quite frankly, I think the BBC would be quite happy with how the show is performing at the moment. Even if there are questions from its fan bases and its casual viewers maybe as well, as to whether it's quite found its zone.
Yeah.
I don't think it's found its zone. I think that is a fair thing to say, regardless of whether you like it or hate it. I don't feel it feels
going to its stride.
No, I don't think I don't think it's found what it wants to be quite yet. As I say, I think last week was an indication of that, the way it sort of dropped back into comfort territory of the families, which he did. I felt like that felt underconfident. And I think it needs, there's something which a lot of shows like this really, especially Doctor Who, carries, is a moment of catharsis for the audience where, and Doctor Who doesn't do this enough, to be honest, where you get a moment like you get in House or Community or maybe even Sherlock, where there's a moment where the thing turns and there's a speech or there's something which just gets the audience go, yeah, this is what I've been waiting for. This is the moment where the main character turns it around or stands up against something, and I get that payoff. And I'm just not feeling that yet. And Doctor Who doesn't always do it, to be fair. So it's not really a criticism necessarily against Chibnall. But I've not felt that really, really at all this season. The biggest moment for me was the Rosa on the bus. That was the biggest moment where they sort of got that. Mm-hmm. But the show just doesn't seem to be delivering that at the moment. And as I say, it hasn't always delivered it. It's not like it's something that's always been there. But when I think of shows where I think that moment where I get excited, it's when that main protagonist, something happens which makes me feel there's been a big payoff. And you should get that per episode. Even if it's just that moment where the hero suddenly realizes what they've got to do, or there's a shift from helplessness to confidence. There needs to be something there to make that moment where you go, yeah, I want to watch that moment again. And I'm just not seeing it yet in this series. And I think that's when it starts to find its, when it finds what that moment is for this Doctor, that's when I think it finds its stride.
The BBC in 2005 announced the commissioning of the second series within days of Rose being announced. Now, airing. Now, that was their hand being forced, of course, because news leaked that Christopher Eccleston had only done one series and was moving on. And then a few days later, David Tennant was announced as having been cast. However, it does seem strange that they've completely not mentioned the second series for Jodie at all.
They've done this another year, though, didn't they? We had this same question, one of the Capaldi years.
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
Like,
yeah.
There was no mention of when it was going to be announced, and there was a question when it was just suddenly announced. So I'm not too worried about that. I think it's going to happen. It's just not going to happen fast for whatever reason, which is a shame, because I think regardless of any issues, this is a new era of the show. It needs the confidence of the BBC behind it. And in fairness, in its promotions coming up to the return of the show, it seems to have had that. I just think it would have been nice to feel that there was a definitive future in this. Cause...
Yeah, well, getting into your stride in a series, I think also getting into your stride is in a wider thing. You know, I have a series, a few months off, the next series, you know, and that's not going to happen. So there's that stride to consider as well, that kind of routine, that's like getting the new audience in, this Absolutely. Will be back next year with more of this. Well, it's not going to be back next year with more of this. So it's I mean, the BBC have done nothing to keep Doctor Who's audience over the past 5 years, I would say.
No, it feels it's struggling, but I wonder whether the BBC itself is struggling to try and find its voice and its position in a new world media order where it's position and power is being massively subjugated by changes that mm-hmm. it can't compete with because it's not a proper commercial enterprise. And as has been said, it's been doing very small things to protect its properties. So questions like the BBC Studio project sort of gives a certain amount of independence and safeguards some of its major properties by making it sort of very globalized and commercially armed, independently armed constructs. But
yeah,
at the same time, yes, in terms of what it's doing with these things, the fact it doesn't seem to have any strategy just doesn't help these things really work. And maybe it's trying to adopt that more VOD strategy where you don't really know when things are going to come on until very close near the time. There's that. I don't know. I just don't feel like the BBC really knows what it's doing now. And I don't kind of blame it. I'm not quite sure I'd know what to do with it. But yeah. For the shows themselves, it doesn't help. It doesn't help at all, especially dramas.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I've, as mentioned previous week, I've got the third series of Man in the High Castle to watch. I didn't know that was coming along until about 2 weeks about a month ago.
Yeah.
I knew it must have been in production. It's been like a couple of years since the last series, and I knew that there was a third series. I knew it must have been in production, but there was no indication whatsoever from Amazon that it was going to be coming along until they dropped the catch-up episode, which is a kind of a 30-minute compilation of everything that's happened so far to as you know, as a recap. So I don't know if that would hurt Doctor Who or if that would give Doctor Who a bit of cash.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, this is it. Do you follow that model? Should the BBC be following that model? Because it's not a commercial. Because it's not independent. It's not commercial like the independent broadcasters that ITV deals with. Could it get away with doing that? Could it adopt that commercial strategy that Netflix can do because it's almost the opposite of what it is, on the basis that Netflix doesn't have to do it because it's got no advertisers to have to utilize to make sure its shows do well, which is that model where you promote because you know you're relying on advertising money. So when the show comes out, people are watching it, so you get the advertising revenue so you can afford to be making these shows. But when you don't have that situation with the BBC per se, and you don't have that situation with Netflix per se because it's a subscription thing anyway, so it's your gateway that you're paying for, does the BBC need to be doing this massive saturation to get its shows watched? Mm. But I suppose it does because it still relies on audience figures to justify its shows.
Well, you know, so, I do wonder if, you know, I can see, well, I can see it quite easily because it's on there now, but, you know, going back into a more pure approach, I can see a Doctor Who with a big scope and scale doing well in that way. A Doctor Who that's kind of meandering a little bit like it is at the moment, or something that's less big like the Capaldi era.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that would do well. But, you know, looking back at sort of the 2007 and 2008 series and the run of specials, it's got like big, unashamedly brash and populist and with just like throwing aliens into it and everything, that kind of thing that, you know, rightly couldn't stay the course doing it like that all the time. But I think a show like that could do well on Netflix or in that format of just dropping all episodes at once.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? it makes you wonder. But again, this is all about this being a very uncertain time for a traditional broadcasting. I mean, yes, it still has the audiences, does it? But those audiences are still always dropping marginally, not as much as people think. But there is a question of live TV and how we consume drama. Does it lead to, you know, is Doctor Who something that would be better box setted? And yeah, I don't know. But I think that is one of the reasons that, you know, when we look at BBC and we go, what the hell is it doing here? What's Doctor Who doing? And even what the show's doing, because it sometimes feels like it's very aware and trying to mimic sort of the sort of Netflix consumption model of how it creates its narrative and its shows. And then sometimes it feels like it's trying to defy it. And then sometimes I'm not sure what the hell it's doing.
I don't think it's known what it was since Moffat took over, to be honest with you, in that regard.
I think the big mistake Moffat had was is that he went with the same safe format, and that seems to become stuck.
Yeah.
In that, but obviously since about 2013, where you suddenly have this growth in the VOD and VOD original content, especially, the show seems to have been uncertain what it's meant to be and how it's meant to do itself. And I get, so I can have sympathy with the show and the BBC for not knowing how to really work this. I just feel that in both cases, it's not doing the shows any favours in some of the strategies that have been made. Part of me thinks that, you know, maybe the old Jonathan Creek approach of having just like a three stories a year would be better for the show, or maybe if it was entirely sold to Netflix and ran as a Netflix thing, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel like the writing is up to the quality that I see on Netflix. I think that's probably one of the problems.
Yeah.
Is that I think part of that is because the show is still trapped in not knowing what it is anymore and who it's actually catering for. And I don't know the answer to that either.
I don't either, but I'm now interested by the idea of a licensed Doctor Who on Netflix or Amazon with certain people who have done very well running Doctor Who in the past 15 years in charge.
I mean, I'd love to see
it in a different direction.
I'd love to see them hire. I mean, you could have a British producer, showrunner, and go and change the model, because this showrunner model isn't even our British model. It's not even, we don't have shows to run like this because we don't have multiple writers teams.
It's a conceit, really, isn't it?
It is a conceit. But to actually bring in an American television writers into the Doctor Who show, have a British showrunner that sits on top and manages, and just see what a writer's room, that sort of writer's room format, which allegedly is what Chibnall was going for this year anyway. I just don't see the evidence of it.
No.
But that would be interesting, because you've got, I mean, I've just finished watching Daredevil season 3, and after a quite disappointing second season, it was very good, very clever. Obviously, like a lot of binge watching shows, it had an overarching arc that went throughout it. Maybe it feels a Doctor Who's got to try that. Maybe Doctor Who's got to try that, or a Children of Earth approach.
Yep.
And actually try and do something radically different.
We talked about that last summer, I think, yeah.
And I was always very pro doing single anthology stories, but that still doesn't seem to be working very well.
No.
So maybe it needs to try something bigger and different.
Yeah, I agree, obviously. It's a shame we're having this conversation still in some ways. But, you know, I mean, the ratings for overnight, there's 6.1 million, I think, for 6.1 or 6.4 for this episode.
I think it was 6.1, which 6.12. Yeah, 29.5% audience share.
Right, so that's down 300,000.
It is Bonfire. Yeah. Guy Fawkes sort of time as well, which I know we can always give excuses, but
I think the AI scores will be more telling.
Yeah.
Than just general audience, because people will watch telly if something's on. If something's, you know, alongside the popular shows of the day, you know, group two popular shows together, they'll get a bigger audience than just putting one popular show on next year's Don't Scare the Hare, for instance. So with Doctor Who next to Strictly Come Dancing, which took 9 million viewers. So, and both shows are slightly down. So again, that would back up the Guy Fawkes viewers.
And again, I mean, maybe other things we need to be considering is, and I don't know whether we are as a media observers, is what's coming on or what's dominating other media forms like Netflix and Amazon. Are the shows which are sort of coming out, which are taking people's attention away from traditional television? Are people, you know, on the weekends not even really thinking about checking what's on the BBC, but just carrying on with the latest season of Daredevil or the latest season of Man on the High Castle? You know, are those starting to infringe on that, those sort of spaces? It's a difficult one to work out. I don't know. I just feel that the show probably needs to do some major changes, or if it's going to continue doing this format, it needs support. And I think back to Russell T. Davis, where this sort of show as it is now would probably really greatly benefit from having mini episodes again.
Yeah, I was just going to say that when you mentioned Netflix just now and what people are doing on an evening and watching YouTube, and those mini episodes on YouTube were, or on the BBC website initially, those mini episodes were great.
But especially if you've got four characters now in the space of 50 minutes, maybe those mini episodes would help get people to know those characters a little more, where there isn't so much space for them to be there to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know, and including the Doctor as well. So maybe that would have been a really nice way to give support to this, rather than the constant sort of barrage of behind-the-scenes stuff, which, I don't know, ultimately never always feels a bit of a backhanded way to deal with things, or even a bit of a cheap way to deal with things, to try and show behind the scenes as if what behind the scenes is as important as what you're actually seeing on the show. And it's like, is it? I just watched quite a fun one, to be honest, from BBC America about dancing and how Jodie Whittaker can't dance. And it was kind of fun to watch, but I was thinking, ultimately, does that really help inform my show? Is it, in a way, does the sort of back scene stuff try and make you feel warmth to people behind the show so you'll enjoy the stuff you're watching more?
Well, so, you know, all that's really likely to do is, if in the unlikely event of ever bumping into Jodie Whittaker in a nightclub, you don't ask her to dance.
It's a fun bit of faff, but I just kind of feel could be very cheap scenes, character-written scenes, filmed in the blocks, would probably just be enough to...
Very cheap character-written scenes that could be written by new writers.
Absolutely.
New to television.
I mean, you could even have, over the series of 10 episodes, you could have one scene, you could have TARDIS scenes. You could just write them in that set.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some very early on in season 5 with Matt Smith and... Which were quite good.
Yeah.
They were quite nice little scenes which gave you a little bit more insight into who Amy Pond was, and who the Doctor was. Things like that would just, I think, help establish. But it's a difficult one.
It is. Oh, so there we are. We're halfway through Doctor Who Series 11. We've pretty much poured our thoughts into this podcast on the last two episodes and where the series is. At the moment, we're giving you our ratings of the last two episodes. We've given you, dear listener, the benefit of your own opinions by referring to our Facebook page. If you have any more thoughts, then do leave them under this podcast, and we will try and grab them. We are always grateful to hear from you. We should be back next week, schedules permitting. If not, we can give you something that isn't James and I witching on endlessly, as if we know something. Until then, it's goodbye.
This is a Beyond Castor Bruce podcast, available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastorBruce.com.